Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and today we have something a little different for you, something new. We've been trying these new interviews. We're recording interviews with all kinds of people who are in one way or another giving public witness to the Catholic faith, and we're delighted with what we've gotten from these people. So many extraordinary people living the Catholic faith in a public way, and so we thought we'd share a couple of these interviews with you today. This hour, we speak with Nick Madden. He's the CEO of Red Door Escape Rooms, and he's also the CEO of Scent Ventures, a Catholic group for entrepreneurs, and he's chosen to bring his faith fully into the workplace with him. And what's that like? What's it like to be fully Catholic in the workplace? We talked with Nick to find out what the benefits of that are, what the pitfalls might be. And we just had a wonderful conversation, and I think you'll really enjoy it. So here's Nick Madden. This is what he had to say about his life publicly witnessing to the Catholic faith. Nick Madden, thank you very much for coming in and talking with us.
It's great to be here.
I appreciate you spending the time. And there's a lot to talk about with you. Your own faith journey. You're now the CEO of Scent, which is an apostolate or ministry to Catholic entrepreneurs. But if you don't mind, I'd like to start with your business, with Red Door mm-hmm. Escape Rooms. Mm-hmm. I think most people know what an escape room is. There will be some of our listeners who won't know what an escape room. So if you could tell us what that is, and then how did you become the guy who locks families in a room together?
Yeah, happy to share. So an escape room is an experience where you come with a group of people and you have to figure out puzzles, hints, and clues to escape a room in a set amount of time.
Yeah.
So you got to work together. And we like to say everything you need to escape is in the room. So you don't need to have outside knowledge. It's not like trivia night. Everything you have is right there. And yeah. It's kind of like life where you got all everything you need to solve the problems is right there in front of you.
Yeah.
And you just got to work together.
So. And I remember when I first heard it, I was like, what? But people love it. Like it's entertainment, but not like someone else is entertaining you.
Right. Right. It's like you're living the movie that you want to. Did you want to experience when I first did? So I got into it. My then girlfriend, now wife, went to go play. This is, almost 10 years ago, 11 years ago, went to go play an experience. One of the first escape rooms, we were in Dallas, Texas at the time, and we were in prison. So we were in a prison break experience.
Okay.
It was us with another couple. We were on a date night. We met this other couple for the first time in prison.
And
ready, go. And we spent 60 minutes and we did not get out. We got really, really close. But we just had a blast. We were solving things. We were getting out. So there's multiple rooms in these experiences. We start out from the jail cell. We break into the warden's office, into the interrogation chamber. It was super fun.
That's great. Yeah.
So ended up just playing I can
so much different than the date where you go out to a movie or something,
right?
Like, there is that part of the attraction of it for you.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Yeah. So it's super hands on, and I think that a lot of our entertainment is passive, and we leave that experience feeling a little bit like a vegetable.
Yeah.
Like it's not actually refreshing to the soul to do something where you're kind of just the passive recipient.
Yeah.
And in an escape room, if you're passive, you don't go anywhere. You don't have fun. You just sit there. You're stuck. So like you have to
move. You're actually in jail.
Right, right. Yeah. And it's not fun. So you've got to move through it. And honestly, what happens a lot of times is, for the first 10 minutes, someone's trying to figure out, okay, do I like this? And then they realize, okay, it's a 60-minute experience. I got to commit.
Yeah.
I got to commit or I'm going to be here the whole time. And when they start committing and they start figuring things out, they feel a sense of accomplishment that they haven't in a lot of other areas of their life. Yeah. A lot of people's jobs don't have a cycle where they feel a sense of accomplishment on a daily or even weekly basis.
Right.
You can win, you solve problems with someone you love and you escape and have a high, and we have these red celebration buttons that you run out and you slap the button and it sends off lights and sound and you celebrate to your favorite songs and just like you have a great time and feel accomplished. And that's kind of what we offer.
It's fun to solve problems. Mm-hmm. It's fun. I mean, I think that's why a lot of times like somebody works all week, but for their relaxation, they they build the, you know, furniture or something, because you the working, the solving, the figuring it out, the measuring, all of that. There's something in us that really wants to do that, and the modern world robs us, a lot of people, of that. Some people have a job that's I mean, you as a CEO, that's probably your day, is solving problems, moving things along. But a lot of people are, they feel like a kind of you know, like a cog. I hate to use that word, but we don't feel the value of our own work. It doesn't belong to us.
Right. Right. And I do think it's, and I'm passionate, we can get to this later, but like, I'm passionate about using a little bit of creativity to make the work we have be a little bit less like cogs. So I think that there's a lot to say for not just from a psychological standpoint, but gamifying the work we do and creating ways where people connect, where they work together, where there's gamified points to winning and making progress on things. I think that gives us a sense of childlike play, where the best ideas come out of. And we do that in a number of ways in our business. And it's, I mean, for the business results, it's great, but people love it. They're more fulfilled by it. They're energized leaving work. And so I do think it's actually it's possible, even within a sterile banking environment, even within, you know, engineering world, we have a whole engineering team. Like, it's with a little creativity applied, you can have it, work can be really fun.
There's so many directions I feel like I could go with you at once. I hope I don't forget them all, because you're touching on so many things. But let me go back then to, all right, so you do this was, first of all, a really good date for you, a wife and a career out of this. This was like one of the best dates ever.
That's right.
So how do you become the guy that runs the business then? What happened?
Yeah. So we, my wife or my girlfriend and I then, we loved it. I reached out to the owners and asked them if I could franchise. They said no. And I said, well, can I just work for free after my corporate job? I was doing marketing for Frito-Lay, part of PepsiCo. And they said, free labor. Sounds great. I was up front and said, hey, I'll probably do this concept somewhere else. Yeah. Can I just be up front? And they said, no problem. And so months of working for them in the nighttime, game mastering groups and learning like on the front lines of the business, like what it looks like to serve people well and host well. And huge percentage was birthday parties. So you get to see you get proposal. We got all these cool events that come in. It's like an underground event company is kind of what escape rooms end up being. So anyways, after a certain amount of time, they said, hey, we really like you. We trust you. We have aligned faith. They're a Christian couple and one of their friends who I still work with. He's our CFO and love him. But end up, they said, hey, would you be willing to manage this location and buy into the business?
Okay.
And rather than buy into that store, it was their one store, it was their baby, their blood, sweat, and tears. I had a vision for growth for the company. So I said, hey, how about we establish a corporate entity that owns the IP, and I won't take the cash flow from the entity you guys have created, but I can grow it and raise capital and do this in more stores. And so that was 10 years ago, and now we've got almost 20 stores.
Wow.
Not franchise.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, all that stuff that you just did, that kind of business thinking, where did you learn that? Like, that's... I mean, what you negotiated there and what you, that's a very creative act in itself, what you did with that, with the way you structured the whole deal. How did you learn to do that?
So I would say that my dad taught us to think creatively about business since we were young. It was, he's a marketer by trade. He looks over sales and marketing for a large company now. And so he would always put just creative inspiration into our minds. And growing up, I was pretty entrepreneurial. I played a lot of sports and I didn't have a lot of time to get a full-time job. But during high school, I wanted money to do things. And so I basically started a summer camp that for not that many hours in the summer paid for all of the extra expenses that I'd have year long, just from, you know, starting a camp, having it marketed to friends, family, and doing a really great job with one of my closest friends. So I had that entrepreneurial itch. I saw success from it. I'd been thinking about business ideas and inspired by my dad to do it.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So, and did you go to school to study business? Is that what you studied?
I studied economics and psychology. Yeah, Harvard doesn't have an undergraduate business degree per se. It's liberal arts and it's kind of original sense, which I've come to actually really appreciate a liberal arts approach. But like leaving college, I didn't have a lot of concrete business skills. I've never taken an accounting course or these things I had to learn, and it was painful. And I'd say it just required a lot of humility to come in and, you know, be in charge of something. And I've never really looked at a P&L before.
So what's that?
A profit and loss statement that breaks down how the business is doing from a financial standpoint.
Though that's got to hurt every month. Look at that. But that's got to be like an anxious moment. Okay.
I had the degree or whatever, but it doesn't matter. It's like when you're in there, it's, hey, here's who I am. Here's what I bring. Here's what I don't know.
Right.
And that I would say that like, I really do think it's the faith that's put that kind of humility front and center for me. And I've seen so much fruit come from it.
Right.
Why not apply that everywhere and business included?
We're sharing with you an interview we did with the CEO of Red Door Escape Rooms and the CEO of Scent Ventures, Nick Madden. More of that interview coming up right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
Are you looking to study Catholic theology in a formal way with the guidance of faithful scholars? Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by the Augustine Institute, offering master's degrees in theology, pastoral theology, and Catholic education with flexible study options on campus, online, or both. The Augustine Institute equips students to serve Christ and His church in schools, parishes, dioceses, apostolates, and the home. Learn more today at augustine.edu.
He was a Jesuit, a cardinal, and a doctor of the church.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Robert Bellarmine is honored for his immense contributions to theology, including helping to draft two important catechisms that defended church teachings during the Protestant Revolt. Pope Clement VIII named Bellarmine a cardinal because, as the Pope put it, Bellarmine had not his equal for learning. He died in 1621.
To find out more about the Doctors of the Church, visit EWTN.com and click on Catholicism.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and we're in the midst of a conversation with Nick Madden, the CEO of Red Door Escape Rooms. Here's more of that on Catholic Answers Live. So where was your faith through all that? So now we've got you to you've got this new entity, which you explained. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that I understand what you explained, but you explained. So where's your faith in all that? Are you like a cradle Catholic and you just never?
Yeah.
Is that what happened?
Well, I'll back up a little bit. And I was super blessed to have a strong faith upbringing in my family. My dad was not Catholic when my mom and he got married. He'd since converted to the faith when my youngest brother was confirmed. So for most of my life, he was not, you know, a confirmed Catholic, but he was always supportive and there. But really, it was my mom that brought faith to the family, and she just has a pure-hearted faith. She just like it's a gift. Faith is obviously a gift, but she brought the faith to the family, put us through Catholic school. I was very well formed. St. Michael's of Poway. Right over here.
Oh, really? You went to St. Michael's Power? What a great school.
Loved it. I still have teachers that I remember. Mrs. Gorin just like teaching us the basics of learning and life and being, just good Catholics. I think that, so I was well formed in middle school.
Okay.
And into high school, went to Cathedral Catholic High School, was a part of the campus ministry program. And like, I would say that period of my life, my faith kind of just was small and then grew. Good momentum until hitting college.
Okay. There's shock. Oh, really? You went to Harvard and your faith was
wild.
Challenged?
Yeah, wild.
I'm shocked to hear that.
But there
are very good Catholics at Harvard.
I
make fun of Harvard sometimes, and then Harvard people tell me, stop it. There's good Catholics there.
Oh, so. I don't care. You can make fun of Harvard. It's great. All right. It's all good fun. I mean, the short of it is that like, I was not the smartest one in any of the classes. I was probably in the bottom half or the bottom quartile. And realize that I'm also one of the only ones that has faith. So maybe I'm dumb for being Catholic.
Really?
That was like the intellectual. So the seed was planted like, all right, I'm kind of not the smartest one here. Maybe everyone's just got it figured out and I'm kind of slow to the game. And like there's, you know, I'm just haven't really like grown up. And then I in particular had a really rough class where the teacher basically outwardly opened up the class at the beginning and pre-apologized for the fact that he was basically going to like ruin faith. For a lot of us, evolutionary psychology. So you can imagine psychology, evolution, basically.
It wasn't Daniel Dennett, was it? No, he wasn't there at Harvard. He was, I forget where he was. But
it was like undermining beauty and goodness and altruism and like going into the, you know, psychological and evolutionary reasons why those things are just, you know, products of the materialism that like so many people believe.
And was it that intellectual challenge to your faith, was it a grave challenge?
Yes.
It was.
Yes.
So you were in a crisis.
I was in a very, very serious crisis. And I probably would have thrown in the towel if I didn't have the habit of going to mass. And I am a social person. I went up to the priest after and I was like, hey, I think I'm dumb for believing this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Father Matt, he's great. Navy chaplain, just doesn't pull any punches. I said, I think I'm dumb. He goes, before you throw in the towel, you should read G.K. Chesterton's Orthodoxy.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, all right, well, if I'm going to throw
him. Threw you a lifeline.
Yeah, threw me a lifeline. And he didn't preach at me. He could have. He probably would have landed. You know, he's a very, very good homilist. But he's just like, you need to read Orthodoxy. And I, you know, can read. So went and got Orthodoxy and it saved my faith.
What in Chesterton saved your faith?
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. The analogy at the beginning.
Okay.
Where he talks about the man in the insane asylum. Have you read Orthodoxy?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
Yeah.
You might remember this. There's so much in there.
I'm not recalling it.
Okay.
So I apologize for that.
No, it's great. It's great. This is the analogy and it strikes me as the parallel, but and he unpacks this. He's kind of hard to read. Chesterton,
I find him hard to read too. I'm glad finally a Harvard guy says Chesterton's hard.
No, man,
hard to,
he's super hard.
It was just us Boston College guys. No, I didn't know that Harvard people had trouble with it too.
It's totally hard. It took me forever to finish it, even though I loved it. I was loving every page, but it took me like a long time to I ended up reading through, you know, some stuff you just read past it and then come back to it later.
Yeah.
Or else I never would have finished. The analogy, so I'm a big analogy guy. I like analogies. The analogy he gives is beautiful. It's of a man in an insane asylum who believes that everyone is a figment of his play. So he believes that he is the center of the world and everyone that comes – so he's in this place and he believes that everyone that comes into his life, the person who's bringing him food, the person who's talking with him is all just there as like part of the acting of a play, and it's actually him as the center of the universe. And there's nothing you can tell that person. There's no proof point you can give that person to break them out of that worldview. It's completely plausible. The person comes in. They're trying to explain that they're a real person too. He's just filtering it through the lens of you're just a play. You're just an actor in my play. Of course you'd say that. You've been scripted to say that. So he's still the center of the universe. There's nothing you can say to break him out of it. So in his mind, it's plausible. It's fully plausible. And that's in one camp. The other camp is that you are a person. So this person realizes that they actually are one person amongst many, and that everyone has their own experiences, and that he's actually part of a larger play. And the Chesterton analogy is basically like, to that person, both might be possible, but one is more exciting and beautiful. Which one do you want to try first?
Oh, wow.
So it's like materialism could hold water. Like material, you can't really, there's obviously miracles that would break through, but you talk to someone who's like really hardcore materialist. They're just like,
material wouldn't break through. I mean, a miracle wouldn't break through if you're, because there's nothing that can break through a solipsism that you can't if the person is committed to it.
Yes, exactly right. Exactly right. And so his thing was like, I'm trying to present a more beautiful alternative that's worth exploring first.
Wonderful.
I was like, I needed that permission to not need to disprove everything this professor just did and like go to town with all these people who like are probably objectively just way higher IQs than me, but I can explore something equally as plausible and more beautiful. And then I've since explored it and I've just found it to be true.
Isn't it wonderful that what Chesterton did there, and I'm totally baffled that I have no recollection of this, but what he did there was an invitation. That's the primary, the person in the crisis of faith doesn't need just explanations or threats or, you know, any whatever other. The fundamental strategy is invitation. Make a convincing invitation.
Yes.
And then it's up to the person to pursue that invitation.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So from that point, I basically, kept going to mass, but dove more seriously into the intellectual tradition.
Wonderful.
Started to unravel things and realized that I wasn't dumb for being Catholic.
Right.
Maybe less intelligent than most people in the room, but it took me on the path of loving the intellectual tradition of the Catholic Church and then since then deepening my prayer life and from there is.
Okay. So goodness. What else in the intellectual tradition of the Catholic Church grabbed you? I mean, Chesterton, he's really something, isn't he? He's like, even you think of people like Lewis, C.S. Lewis, mm-hmm. who so many people really mm-hmm. is deeply indebted to Chesterton.
Oh yeah.
And all of them are indebted to Cardinal Newman.
Yes.
I mean, that's really that's where that whole, if you chase it all that English apologetics back to Newman.
Yes.
But who grabbed you? Did Lewis, for example?
Lewis definitely grabbed me. I Thomas Aquinas, I've needed to read his stuff kind of for dummies. You know, I wasn't going into the Summa and like diving in right away.
Uh-huh.
But I also found that, so I started to take classes. This is the benefit of a liberal arts education. I started to take classes in philosophy. And it's a way of thinking that is different and so much different than maybe an engineering or a mathematical. It's like it's a higher order level of thought. And I hadn't really been exposed to philosophy before. So I actually had a great professor who kind of took us through a bunch of different schools of, you know, from Stoicism through Aquinas to, you know, the philosophy behind capitalism and just a lot of the different thinkers. We had to read Kant and all these different, competing worldviews to Catholicism. And I was able to just get to the point where I could actually process through what people were saying and think philosophically about things.
Right.
So it wasn't necessarily that I just like read every single thing, you know, Chesterton wrote. Off the bat, I don't have quite a like Bishop Barron-esque story where you just like go in and just like really start reading everything. But I learned the skill of being able to think philosophically.
Yeah.
And since then, I've just been able to kind of grow in that. It was a really gift. It was a huge gift.
I feel like you talked about gamifying work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I feel like, if I may, what Chesterton did for you was gamify education. Mm-hmm. That there was a thing where there was a challenge. Is it this thing or is it that thing?
Mm-hmm.
And you had to go explore. It gave a purpose to your education,
yes.
Not just an undirected, let me do the Harvard curriculum, but yes. A directed, I am seeking something here in my education. And one of the problems with young people going to college is they're actually not seeking anything. They're not there seeking knowledge or wisdom, understanding. They're there to do whatever the things are that they're supposed to do.
Yes.
So that they can get the thing they're supposed to get.
Totally. And it's a two-edged sword because in a liberal arts education, which I know the world's kicking and screaming against for, you know, more practical world life, you know, job training skills. But in a liberal arts, it's especially dangerous because you can end up taking a bunch of classes that you just have to fill the core curriculum. But if you don't have purpose, being able to directly take English and philosophy and the study of history through American film and like do these things, but like with a philosophical lens of depth and like the looking for truth, that was a huge gift. I had the permission to take these randomly Wonderful. Disparate, like I'll never get that chance again.
No.
I think you're right. It did kind of gamify it and give some purpose to something that would have been aimless.
Right, right. And if it's aimless, it's vulnerable because, you know, you just get knocked around by whatever the evolutionary biology, and there's nothing wrong with evolutionary biology,
sure.
But that person who said that understands only a piece of the pie. And that's that professor's problem is not understanding the whole pie.
Yeah. Chesterton writes, an open mind is like an open house without a roof.
Yeah.
you don't build very well. You don't live very well. You need a door.
Yeah.
You get into the house via a door that has some, you know, intelligence behind it.
Right. And how wonderful that Chesterton was the door that opened for you. What about, if I may ask, in your life as a Catholic, because obviously the intellectual tradition of the Catholic Church is wrestle with that and something good is going to happen to you. But I want to ask about the person of Jesus, not just the church and the sacrament. And all these things are Jesus. I'm not
sure,
separating them.
Yeah.
But what about the person of Jesus? How have you encountered him and how did you encounter him?
Yes. I might give a longer answer, but I think we've got a little
time. You have time to give a longer answer. If you're talking about Jesus, go as long as you want.
Yeah.
That's what we like to talk about.
No, I think that like Jesus, my relationship with Jesus has grown tremendously from the chipping away, the whittling down, the killing of all of my false selves.
Okay.
And that came like very clearly in college with intelligence. Like I thought I was proud of how smart I was in high school.
Yeah.
And then realizing that like that's actually not something I can be proud of. Like, boom, you get a piece taken out in college. And then for athletics, it was that for a while. I played volleyball for 4 years in college. It was like a part of my identity being part of sports growing up, and got hurt. And realize, you know, from there and realizing that, you know, I'm only getting older. I'm only going to become less athletic now.
Right.
There's those things that I think really kept me from a really authentic prayer life of just like wholehearted, like, Jesus, this is who I am. And I know you know this already, but I think that as those things got stripped away and my prayer life deepened, I just came to know and love the Lord in prayer. And so a couple things like specifically there. And another thing in particular, and this is, I think, relevant for my journey into the business world and sent as well, is money. I think there's a security a lot of us take in money. And I saw the escape room business. I love the product. I saw the potential for an experiential entertainment platform. But I also thought this is going to make a bunch of money.
All right, well, we got to take a quick break, so we'll come back right after this with more Nick Madden. We'll find out just how all of that worked out on Catholic Answers Live. When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to casociety315.com and join today.
We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world. But it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun. And that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests, he does on-air debates, and he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron. Well, Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. We're sharing an interview we did recently with Nick Madden, the CEO of Red Door Escape Rooms. Here's more of what Nick had to say.
I love the product. I saw the potential for an experiential entertainment platform, but I also thought this is going to make a bunch of money.
Right.
I can't wait to make a bunch of money, you know, head into it. And that was not the reality. Like, growing a business is not the way to make a bunch of money fast. And I basically, for a number of years, just lived on not a lot. And so the stripping away of money as a security and like needing to ask for help from family and friends and like having that basically my relationship with money put in its proper place, that was another stripping away of a sense of security or ego. And so, then doing Exodus 90, this is down the road a little bit, but, taught me the different depths that prayer can go to.
Oh, that's so great.
And so now I just spend a lot of time with the Lord in prayer. And I love Jesus.
I'm glad, because Exodus 90 is for men. It puts men in contact with other men, which is, first of all, one of the things that we need. We're not made to be lone wolves.
That's right. It is not good for man to be alone.
No, it's right. It's hard. Like, it's not easy to do. Yeah. Was the fact that it was hard attractive to you or off-putting or what?
It was definitely attractive. I kind of have a, you know, I'm good at hard things sort of narrative. My dad was super hard worker and still is. And so, but the beauty of the program is that it's not about the white knuckling it. And I think that's what most people see on the surface is like, oh yeah, you're not drinking and you're taking cold showers, you're doing all this stuff. And, but what actually comes through it is like, it's almost like the analogy of the law and the spirit, where like, if you try to adhere to the law for the sake of the law, you miss the whole point. When you move past that into the spirit, it's not that you've thrown away aestheticism, or it's not that you've thrown away the disciplines of the Old Testament. It's, we still stand when we read scripture, just like in Nehemiah.
Yeah.
But like, it's in the spirit of the law that surpassed it. You go to some place that's deeper and more beautiful. And the spirit of Exodus 90 is to be able to rightly order your life. And so like, I think I had so many competing priorities. And then going through and realizing like, God, I can't do all these disciplines. It was a big competition. I was white knuckling it. I'm trying to get the hour of prayer. And then it was just like, you can let go. I wasn't stressing if I missed a discipline. It was coming into fraternity. It was rightly ordered towards the holy hour of prayer, which is like the thing that is like the hardest for most people and kind of gets put on the list, but like is the thing. I think that's like that's the journey of Exodus that most men who I know have gone through it have come out the other side with, but not entered for. You're like, I want to do the hard thing, but you come out with like, oh wait, I love fraternity and I love prayer.
Yeah.
And I'm able to do the hard thing.
What a wonderful testimony. Yeah. That's a really good, I take a clip of this. Who's ever running.
Yeah. Send it to James. I happen to know that, and it's beautiful because it was really cool at Scent a couple of years ago. James Baxter, the founder of Exodus, was talking and one of his things was like he gives himself slack. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't think, okay, the founder of Exodus 90 could be this like hardcore aggro dude who's like getting all these followers because of how many days he can fast. Right. That's not him.
Right.
And that's the spirit behind the program is one that calls it to deeper conversion and prayer and just love of Jesus.
Okay.
So it's like, it's hard to come to like my story with Jesus without bringing up Exodus because it's made a big difference for me.
Yeah, that's good. It's an extraordinary time we're living in because there are these opportunities for people many lay apostolates are doing it. Like other people might have the same story you had without Chesterton without Exodus 90 or, but it would be, I met an Opus Dei or yes. a Miles Christi priest or something. There are these things that are there for the laity now that yes. I think are bearing fruit.
Oh, yeah.
And now you want them to bear fruit in the business environment.
Oh yeah.
You're a businessman. That's what you do. Yeah. Like, and in a certain way, this is a very interesting conversation for me because usually who I'm talking to are people who their livelihood is connected actively to the church. Yeah. You know, they're, even if they're a journalist or an author, it's church work that they're doing. You're not doing church work. You're doing, you're in the business world.
Yep.
So I want to get into that a little bit. Like, first of all, there must be temptations in the business world. Like when you look at that P&L, which I know what a P&L is, by the way, it's a profit and loss statement. Sure.
You, I wasn't judging you.
You were judging me, Harvard man.
No, it's good.
When you look at that, there must be temptations to not do it the right way sometimes, to not treat people, whether it's your vendors or your employees or whatnot, to not treat people the right way.
Yes.
So tell me about Catholic faith and business.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd love to. This is something I'm super passionate about.
Okay,
and
good.
I'm trying to live well now. So I don't have it figured out. And I think this is the beauty of my role in both of these companies I'm a part of. With Red Door, I get to walk the walk of like, I am leading a company. It's got 400 plus employees now. Like we've got locations across the country. We have full production team, marketing, everything in-house. And it's a challenge to do our faith is a very high bar. Our world, let's call it our capitalistic economic society, is working against it in a lot of ways.
Right.
It tells you basically that just pursue your own self-interest and just do it kind of ethically and everything will kind of work out.
Right.
And it's kind of like, our world tells us to just outsource virtue, to like let the system be virtuous. Like, but really, there's no way that we transform culture without actually taking virtue seriously at the individual level.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, some of the temptations, like, so our company was founded in a church, Red Door Escape Room, and that's what originally attracted me to the founders, Dan, Esther and Sang were the three founders. Dan and Esther are married, beautiful family. I love them. And Sang, also married, now a beautiful family, and they're founded in a church. And so our company's got biblical roots to it and biblical values. And we think of our values kind of like the walls of the castle. So our values screen what gets in.
Okay.
And then our behaviors within the castle, our culture, our practices, the way we talk, the things we do is what happens within the castle walls. And that's either like the city of God or the city of man. And so we've kind of taken that very literally. Like we're on a mission, the city analogy kind of breaks down, but like we're only here for so long. So we're pilgrims on this journey, and our mission's to deepen relationships between people through creative entertainment. So in a world that's isolated, we bring people together. We think the devil disperses. We bring people together to have a meaningful moment with folks that they probably don't get that many meaningful moments with. Colleagues, even family, a lot of times coming back for the holidays. Like the last time you worked on something with your kid.
Yeah.
Maybe not since their homework assignment in seventh grade. Or project.
I couldn't do the seventh grade. I stopped at about fourth grade trying to help them with homework. But yeah, thank you for that vote of confidence in my intellect.
Right, right. It doesn't happen that often.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
You don't get there. Anyways, our mission is broader than just escape rooms. We like to think we're doing our mission, whether it's escape rooms, whether it's live game shows, which we're about to roll out soon, and like do all sorts of fun stuff. But it's a Catholic social teaching aligned, oriented mission.
Yeah.
Biblical values.
Right.
And then you put the values out there and you let the team be honest on whether or not you're living them.
Oh, they get to challenge you.
Oh, yeah.
This.
Yeah. Are we living
what form does that take? Like in a practical way.
Yeah.
I work for you. How do I challenge the values of the company?
100%. So we're doing surveys multiple times a year. How well is the leadership team living their values? Everyone knows our values by heart. We go in, we got people over profit, growth over comfort, servant leadership over titles, gratitude over entitlement, authenticity over image. Like these are things that like are such temptations in today's world. Like take people over profit, for instance.
Yeah.
COVID hits. It would have been really easy to keep our salaries and not have our families at risk. We cut salaries top down across the board to keep all our managers employed. That's just like what we had to do. We couldn't just like keep this fat executive team at the top of the thing. That's not the right way to do that for people over profit. And it doesn't mean we don't profit as a company.
Yeah.
But like, for example, we're going to increase our health benefits every year. We're not where we want to be yet, but like we want to cover more, especially for people who have chronic illness, serious illness, starting families, like, okay, it's people over profit. Yeah. It's not for the retention policy. It's because it's important to have good health.
So you can, yeah, I see the temptations are greater than I was thinking of too, because you could just not do that. You could just say, ah, this is the healthcare we offer. It's, you know, take it or leave it.
Yeah.
You could, you could take your salary and like that, like through COVID, you had to take a pay cut.
Oh yeah.
Through COVID.
Oh yeah.
So that other people could be paid.
And I've got an amazing, amazing set of business partners. The only way that Red Door is the way it is because of us as a leadership team being so committed to the mission, so committed to the values, and a really high degree of trust. Yeah, I work with business partners that are just out of this world.
Well, a lot of people in their mind are conflated the words capitalism and business. That's the same thing. Capitalism and business is the same thing. Mm-hmm. Is it the same thing to you, or is business a different thing?
Business is a different thing. I think of I like the word economy.
Okay.
Because it's rooted in the interactions of the household.
Okay.
And so I think if we are actually serious about the gospel and we see ourselves as sons and daughters of Christ,
yes,
and we see those in society as our brothers and sisters, then we're trying to make our economy look more like a well-functioning holy household. And so it looks less like a transactional thing and more about a relational thing. And I love that, Christ says, you know, make friends for yourself with dishonest wealth. That's in the scriptures. So okay, I pondered that for so long and I was so confused, but it really clicked. Make friends for yourself. Like the wealth we have now is all just a gift. The dollars and cents, call it the money. You could say it's not a one-to-one trip, but say it's the money you have. Use that to be bonding you more with people. If that's the function of money, if it's actually for the common good relationally and like practically, like if it actually does that,
right,
then this like capitalism is the form that our economy kind of takes and runs on. I think it's that word is confusing to a lot of people. We could put that in a separate bucket, but like if we're trying to make our economy look more like the kingdom, it looks like a relational use of money. So like the people we partner with are people I want to do life with.
Yeah.
Like we just partnered with this group to do a new venture and we met with them in person and I like their character. I like them as people. I want to do work with them. Great. The contract is a way to solidify that and kind of put your money where your mouth is, so to speak. But that's a downstream effect of doing life.
All right, we got to step away for a few seconds and then we'll be right back with more from Nick Madden on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Bishop James Conley of the Diocese of Lincoln. Keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live.
One of the biggest mistakes a Christian can make is to try to do good without God's help. Saint Therese said, when we trust only ourselves and not God, our soul becomes incapable of virtue. Her remedy? Works of charity. And the greatest work of charity is to share the gospel. At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we encourage you to share the gospel with someone who doesn't know Jesus. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. StreetEvangelization.com.
Carry the faith wherever you go. Watch your favorite EWTN show, series, or special, or listen to your favorite EWTN radio program at any time, day or night. EWTN On Demand brings all your favorites instantly. Download the EWTN app at EWTNapps.com today.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Now back to our conversation with Catholic CEO, Nick Madden. Well, so here's the thing, the non-religious person hearing you talk.
Yeah, yeah.
Am I excluded from doing business with Nick because I'm not a religious person?
Yeah.
I got my values.
Totally.
I'm a nice person. I love my family. Does he only want to do business with other Catholics?
No way. And I think that's why I think that the workplace is the new evangelization. Like the new evangelization is going to take place in the workplace. people aren't going to churches as much anymore. They're still going to work. So, right. so what?
Well,
what,
are they though? I mean, right. Some of them are not going to work.
They're not going to work as much, but it's more than church.
Yeah. Right. Yes.
And so, what we believe and what I believe deeply is like the law is written on our hearts, and whether or not people realize that they have a longing for something that's greater than just this world, they're drawn to the good, the true, and the beautiful. They're drawn to virtue. And if that's a longing, yeah, hey, I want to be somebody of virtue. Like I want to be somebody of character. Like that's just deeply rooted in the Holy Spirit. And I would love to work with you. It doesn't matter what religious beliefs you would claim. Cause I've seen so many people at Red Door who we've, you know, and we'll welcome people of all different faith backgrounds and all different walks of life. And that's what makes our culture great.
Right.
But we're all moving towards a shared mission and values. And so we're all moving a little bit closer to Christ. It's taken people just one step closer. And if what I am for somebody that works at Red Door is 2 years as a game master and you got a little bit closer to authentic living, authenticity over image, or a little bit closer to servant leadership.
Yeah.
Oh man, I'm bringing you closer to Christ. I'm tilling the soil that the Holy Spirit will absolutely drop a seed, and it's my small part on that person's journey.
Now, has that made your success more difficult? Has that facilitated your success? I mean, because you've had success. You start out, there's one of these, and basically you're going to say, I'm going to replicate this, and I don't know what your goals are, but probably everywhere. I'm just going to you'd like to have a Red Door escape room, like a McDonald's on every, like, but, yeah. But so now it's 20 though.
Yep.
So these values that you bring to this, give me the bottom line on it. Is it make it harder for you to make the business go, or is it facilitating making the business go?
It is a longer term mindset.
Okay.
It's harder in the short term and better in the long term. And the tough part is, do you have the resources? And capital, people, leadership resources, like that's the question to bridge the long term to the short term. Do you have the do you have the resources to make it? So for example, and I actually believe that like the Lord is in control of everything in this world. Like he like no matter
praise
what
God. Yeah, me praise, too. Praise I, God. I agree with you. Yeah.
But take COVID, for example.
Yeah.
So on March 17th, we shut the whole business down. We had 8 locations across the country. We had to furlough a number of people who we had no hourly work for. We had to think about our financial strategy, how much we had to cut to keep people employed. Then you also had government funding, which came in. And praise God that we were a business that benefited tremendously from that. So we're taking the people over profit approach. In the short term, it hurt. Like it hurt my family.
Yeah.
And so it had, but what it gained was loyalty into the company. People who saw how we behaved during COVID are still with us.
Right.
And they're not going anywhere. And we had the bridge of the resources, some of which was government funding. Some of it was government loans that we're still paying back.
Right.
So there was providence, I believe. Some people could say, you know, fortune or some other thing, but like providence that gave us the resources to make the long-term bet actualize.
Mm-hmm.
And I could go through so many different examples where it's been hard in the moment and we've put money on the line, a lot of money on the line, because we're like, Lord, we trust you. This business is yours. Our life is yours. We're not taking it with us. We're using this money to make friends with the dishonest wealth that we've been, you know, loaned, like right. The parable of the talents. And we trust that if it's your will, like you'll see this through. And if it's not seen through here, it'll be seen through in some more beautiful way that we won't know.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Right. Yeah. But he is trustworthy. That's the thing. I mean, and experience teaches that, but experience is a slow teacher. You have to go through a lot of experience to get it, but he is trustworthy.
That's right. And if I could throw one thing in there,
yes.
We could make it all about money, like resources. But what I found more often than not for how the Lord works in business, puts the right person there at the right time.
You've had that experience that the right person shows up when you need that person. 100%,
100%. Wow. So I think that the prayer and discernment around who is brought onto the team, mm-hmm. Who stays on the team, who's brought onto the team, who are the people that are on the team, is probably the most active way that God works in business, because he cares about his children's souls, and money's just a vehicle to that. So he's like, you're made to be here. This person that showed up randomly on interview day that didn't make it past the first cut, that person could save the company.
Yeah.
Like, listen to me. I'm making this very, very clear to you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Holy Spirit. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, before I go too on, I want to ask you about someone listening to this conversation says, I want to learn these principles. Yeah. Are there good, say, Catholic writers who are doing this that for a contemporary business person that you might go, these things that I've talked about, or do I need to get you to write the book, Nick?
No. Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying? Because I think you have such a comprehensive view of it. It's an integrated way of looking at your faith and your work, your family, your business, your employees. Where can people learn to do what you're doing?
Yes. That's what we do at Scent. So that's
that's
literally the tie-in. And that's what brought me to care and love Scent so much, because I started with Scent during COVID with a fellowship cohort. So I was meeting every other week with a group of other business owners wrestling through this stuff.
Yeah.
What should I do? How do we hire? How do I think about future planning? How do I do an org chart? And doing those things with the lens of faith, bringing faith into business, it's done in pockets places. Like, there are good frameworks out there. There's certain authors and podcasts. Like, I've listened and consumed a lot of content on this. But for those who are Catholic, and for those who are leading in business, there's not really the package that's like, okay, here's what it looks like to fully allow your faith to be permeated into your business. And the reason why it's what the Catechism does in a lot of ways. It's like, there are principles, and there are specific guidelines, but to actually work it out in your company's particular healthcare policy, it's got to be worked out with the wisdom of community.
It's not going to happen.
Like, I don't want to write the catechism for Catholics that lead businesses. That's not how it's meant to be done. It's actually meant to be done with beautiful conversation and witness mm-hmm. from people who've navigated things. This is something that just back on the faith formation piece for me, because this is like, it's all tied together. I didn't even know. I didn't think about this coming up. But after joining Red Door early on, I was in Dallas, still going to Mass every week, but I joined a Protestant community for the community aspect.
Okay.
So during the week, I was going to this men's group, and it opened my eyes to what community could be that I'd never seen in the Catholic Church before.
Wow. Okay.
Huge deal. I've since seen it in Exodus. I've since brought it to every community that I've been a part of. I'm since doing it within our company, Red Door. It's literally the playbook of Scent. It's the beauty and goodness that comes from intentional community mm-hmm. amongst a group of people pursuing a common good. And so what I think actually happens for faith making it into business is we all do different aspects well.
Okay.
And when you get in a room and you have intentional conversations, people are inspired. They're sharpened in the ways that others are doing well. It's like a witness to each other. Oh man, I'm loving on my direct reports in a different way. I'm mentoring differently. I make financial decisions differently. I measure what matters differently. The scorecard that we says matter. The way that we gamify work and keep it fun. The way that we do PTO and policies is different here. And you get enough people who are intentional about their faith being a part of their work to kind of cross-pollinate within a room, and you take the red pill, like the Matrix. Like, you can't see anything different. You're mm-hmm. like, wait a minute, they do PTO like that and it's beautiful, or they do their healthcare assist, or they do, you know, performance reviews and planning like that. How human, how beautiful. It's not the sterile corporate playbook that people are sick of. It's like, oh yeah, that's possible. Oh yeah, I could do that too. I'm gonna copy that. I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna talk to him about that. So that's basically what we do at Scent, is as much of the playbook as we can write, and then as much of the conversation as we can have to make it actually permeate.
Hey, if you're enjoying this interview with Nick Madden as I am, there's more to it. We had to cut it for radio, but the whole thing is available at The Cy Kellett Show on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and look for The Cy Kellett Show, and you will find links to this interview and many more interviews to come, we hope. As a matter of fact, that's something we hope to continue to do. So if you have an interest in this or would like to see more of these, let us know. Send us an email, maybe at radio@catholic.com, or reach out to us one of the other ways you can get to us and let us know what you think of doing these kinds of interviews. If you're looking for a link to the interview, to the full interview, you can also find it in the show notes for this show. Just check it out there. Coming up in the next hour, a conversation with Dr. Jacob Imam, who I think is just one of the most interesting people in the world today. He's the founder of the College of St. Joseph the Worker. We're going to talk to him about that college, about education in general, and a whole bunch of other stuff right after this on Catholic Answers Live.